morning. This morning we start with my close collaborator in Nikki Gomez. The introduction to shape dynamics to what Julian in the colloquium yesterday alluded to as a special form of the theory that admits that is that conforms with the principles that he laid out for shape dynamics.
That's right. Perhaps I should have put here something like gauge theory of shape dynamics, and I will do so in future talks. But for this one, we're stuck with the same thing. But everyone knows what I mean by it. Well, or will do by the end of the talk, hopefully. So first, I should start with a notational warning. And this will be focused on a 3+1 formulation. But this should be no surprise, because there have been many talks already so far that have done 3+1 formulations here. So G, for me, will be always a three-dimensional Riemannian metric like Renata used that evolves in time. And if we ever need to use 4D, which will happen very rarely, we'll use H. So one of the key assumptions is that space itself, the sheets, are closed. They are compact without boundary. They are three-dimensional surfaces. And we will avoid the indices as much as we can, but you should be mindful that unless I say something to the contrary, they are there. And here, when we talk about conformal transformations, we mean just these types of vial transformations or scalings. So let's start. Let's start with an easy slide about what is shape dynamics or a gauge theory of shape dynamics. In this talk, I will also, when I talk about shape dynamics, I mean a gauge theory of shape dynamics that, as Tim said, conforms to the principles that Julian Barber put on his colloquium yesterday. So shape dynamics is a Hamiltonian formulation of gravity, and it has the following prominent features. First of all, it possesses the same variables, g and pi, so the canonical variables are the same. There are no non-localities or anything strange introduced there. And it will not possess refoliation invariance or the general relativistic equivalent of the boosts. So, and instead of this, it will trade this symmetry for a foliation-preserving conformal transformations, and we'll be left with a unique non-local global Hamiltonian that evolves time forward as a whole. What it is not, it's not York's approach to the initial value problem and its related constant mean curvature gauge for GR. And it's not what Julian presented yesterday, the CS plus V derivation of York. They are both very useful and they're necessary, but neither has this gauge symmetry that we have in this theory.
I have a question about, since gauge symmetries are between the idle and the older, it can have the same physics described by different gauge symmetries. When you say that what it is not re-derivation of works, or are you saying that the physical observables and things that are measurable are different, or is it a different formulation of the same physics?
No, okay, so that is a good question. It's there are problems, there are technical problems with doing everything in the constraint surface, in the reduced constraint surface. So this avoids that, and it will be a technical tool. For instance, here it's like talking about electromagnetism and electromagnetism in a transverse gauge. So that's true. The physics should be the same up to some certain, because there are certain problems that I was going to address later. For instance, that CMC foliations usually break down and for a lapse equals zero, for instance. And in this case, if the lapse equals zero at some point, it doesn't matter for our interpretation because we have this interpretation of time evolving forward as a whole. And So we haven't studied so far if there are solutions that for this one or solutions for York procedure where just the lapse breaks down at individual points and not. This would be a main difference, for instance.
So are you saying this is not a formulation of relativity? Because in relativity, of course, you do have invariance under change of different possibilities of slicing. And of course, there are lots of solutions of GR that have no CMC
that's
slices
right.
at
that's,
all.
Okay, so yeah, that's another point. So on this will not reproduce all of GR. So if you find, for instance, if we found that we live in a universe that does not admit a CMC foliation, this theory would be falsified.
In fact, of course, ADM already drastically cuts out a whole lot of GR solutions as well.
The globally hyperbolic.
Globally hyperbolic.
But there are physical things that will be attached to whether it's globally hyperbolic or not. It's less clear what it means physically to be CMC.
Well, it means this. It means that we have local conformity.
What deep physical principle does that touch on? Hypervalidity is tied to.
Yeah, but this.
The mathematics
but
the
we like
why is CMC?
Well, after Julian's talk yesterday, this should represent this principle of local size, local scale. Okay. So the roadmap here is I'll give a very brief review of Hamiltonian GR, basically because these things have already been mentioned in previous talks, and people seem to be already familiar with them. And then I'll go through the main ideas in shape dynamics. Is my mic working, by the way?
Yeah.
Yes? OK. And then we'll add matter and quickly do show what we have as a large volume expansion. And then we'll do the conclusion. So the purpose of this talk is to familiarize the audience with the construction of the main theories of this gauge theory of shape dynamics. So let's see. The outline here is something that everyone's familiar with, the aforementioned globally hyperbolicity condition. You foliate space-time, you get lapse shifts, and constraints. So first of all, let me talk a little bit about direct analysis very quickly, crash course, because we will be talking about this. If phi denotes constraints, they will define surfaces and flow in phase space. And these flows will have different degrees of compatibility. So first, they might be compatible, which means one flow propagates the other, or conserves the other symmetry. And you might also have that to impose further constraints, for instance, impose some constraint on the Lagrange multipliers or on the gauge transformation so that these are conserved. And finally, you have the second class form of the constraints, which means that they arise when the two constraints are in a very specific way conjugate to each other. So you have to either find a coordinate system where they don't appear, or you must project the dynamics on the constraint surface by use of the direct bracket if you want to keep a consistent dynamical system. So ADM is how you get to ADM is use the Einstein equations in four dimensions, and you decompose using the Gauss-Kodaty relations into three-dimensional scalar curvature and extrinsic curvature. You have an overparametrization of the degrees of freedom, and this implies relations that these variables have to satisfy. So these are the constraints that you get. This is the momentum constraint. This is the scalar constraint. And you do get that in GR, they are first class. The total Hamiltonian of GR is, in this case, pure constraint because it's just a sum with Lagrange multipliers of the constraint. This is the called ADM system. I'm just running through this briefly so that I have more time in the end to talk about shape dynamics. So as I mentioned, the momentum constraint will generate 3D diffeomorphisms. And this indeed forms this in a well-defined sense, this Lie algebra. And the scalar constraints, as people have been mentioning, generates time refoliation and with it evolution. And in contrast to this action, it's very difficult to say what are the physical degrees of freedom that should be invariant under this. And it does not form a subalgebra because its commutation relations involve the three diffeomorphisms. And the entire constraint algebra is soft. So and quantization introduces even more difficulties. The scalar constraint is quadratic in the momenta, so you have two functional derivatives at the same point. This is ill-defined. And constraints imposed at the quantum level, you need a Klein-Gordon type equation, you need an inner product in this infinite space of metrics, which is not well-defined. Okay, so now let's go to shape dynamics. And now I will try to be a little bit more positive. So the motivation is that, as Peter was saying, that systems such as GR, which have this gauge symmetries, may have different descriptions. So here we have ADM gravity. Let's say these curves here are the flow of this constraint. So they're all equivalent under the scalar constraint, the action of the scalar constraints. They're all the same, above the same observables. And here we have some gauge fixing with, for instance, the CMC condition, which I will tell what more about. And here we have, let's say, shape dynamics, which has a different symmetry. It's defined by a different symmetry surface. These are the flows of the symmetry, these lines here, if I can just keep my hand straight. And they will also be gauge fixed by the surface of ADM, by the scalar constraint. And that is one of the main technical features that allows us to do this, is that you have these two symmetries being gauge fixed by each other. And so the refoliation invariance thus has this famous gauge fixing exploring the spatial conformal transformations, as has been mentioned here times before, and Jim Eisenberg will be talking more about later. So first, what do we call this constant mean curvature gauge? It's so that the trace of the extrinsic curvature in each leaf is a spatial constant. Roughly, this will mean that observers use the Hubble constant as a clock.
That's extremely inaccurate.
Why?
Well, the Hubble constant is not known better than about two or three parts of a hundred, right? Accurate timekeeping on Earth is like 10 to the 15, 10 to the 16, one part.
Okay, I'm sorry for my inaccuracy. So mathematically, this will mean that the trace of pi is a spatial constant. So it's equal to its mean. We'll be using this notation at some points. This means that you integrate and you take 1 over the volume. So if you note in the phase space that trace pi will generate conformal transformations. So if you do a Poisson bracket or symplectic flow with respect to both canonical variables, it will just generate a scaling here with the appropriate powers. And you can also show that this quantity here will generate conformal transformations that preserve the total volume of the universe. So there are transformal transformations that blow up things here, but they have to shrink it somewhere else. Yes?
Going back to the whole concept, one question. If you have a geometry which is not expanding, which you could, you have no time, even though I could locally make it.
Yes, I mean, this would go back to Julian's talk yesterday, I would say.
With the one where we have the fully conformal theory where the volume can't change. But we find it impossible to, I mean, that was the first theory that Neil and I explored, was one that has full conformal invariance. But we saw no way in which we could explain the wealth of cosmological data which suggests that the universe is.
I don't care about cosmological data, I want to know what time it is.
Well, you. There is a time in there which is closely analogous to the Newtonian time. You remember from my talk the expression for the emergence of time in the Newtonian theory. There would be certainly something analogous to that in the fully conformal one. Perhaps we should talk afterwards because it.
Then why not use that one instead of this?
I think we should.
Can I make a suggestion? Because it's possible to make a philosophical objection to every step. Maybe you should just clearly present the formalism and the theory that you're talking about, and then we have a discussion period where we can argue philosophically.
Okay, I would be willing to take that suggestion. Okay, So the main message in words first is that, as I mentioned, on a certain region of phase space, there will exist a very special system which is dynamically equivalent to ADM. And the region of phase space is that of constant mean curvature, CMC foliable Einstein spacetimes with closed sigma. So Jim Eisenberg will talk about non-CMC foliable, for instance, solutions to GR. And the system here is one that does not possess anymore this refoliation symmetry. It possesses local three-dimensional scale invariance, which implies this what we call symmetry trading. We're trading refoliation invariance for local scale transformations. The constraints in the final formulation of this theory are all linear in the momenta, so they're much more tractable. The individual sets of constraints do form subalgebras, and therefore they're easy to quotient by themselves. The physical degrees of freedom that they take out are very clear. It will exist in the original ADM phase space, G and pi, with the canonical Poisson bracket. So this is also an important point, is that the variables that you use in the end, they don't have, for instance, any non-localities into them, as for instance the pi tt or things like that. And the constraints themselves don't have any non-localities in them as well, the local constraints. It will possess one global Hamiltonian, which will depend only on g and pi. There is no explicit time dependence in a certain way. It depends on g and pi. You can't put in time and see how that goes.
Would you expect explicit time dependence in a Hamiltonian?
Well, it depends on how you do it. Because if you, in this way, for instance, if you do a full gauge fixing, where instead of pi minus mean of pi, you use pi minus some constant lambda, and then square root of g, this lambda would serve as your time. So this would be a t dependence in that sense. It's not one of the main features. So here just a more didactical one. You have these two descriptions of ADM. And so just to go back to his question, it's so these are, there are already many assumptions here, for instance, global hyperbolicity and CMC foliation. So here you're trading these two constraints here. This is the form of the constraint that generates conformal transformations at each point. And you are left with the global shape dynamics Hamiltonian, which has the feature that it is non-local.
Not a philosophical thing. Just I'm getting lost into whether you're actually Julian supposedly has a theory that's not relativity. Is this a different formulation of relativity which emphasizes the CMC foliations, or are you talking about a different theory, something which could be physically observable differences to relativity?
So I think this is the same question as Fettes. The observable differences would come from just if you, for instance, saw from restrictions in phase space, mm-hmm. That's one observable difference. And possibly if you found solutions for which the lattice just collapsed at single points, which would not be considered solutions of general relativity, but would still be considered.
But the local dynamics should be the same, basically?
Yes.
The local dynamics
are not altered.
Whenever you have locally you have CMC foliability around the point right. Space time. And so the local dynamics and whatever local observables you could build in the region of space-time that is CMC foliation are exactly the same.
Yeah. So if you can build the quotient space will be the same for CMC.
Okay.
And
question. In the ADM the constraints Poisson brackets for themselves as structure functions. What about the shape dynamics? Do they have structure functions or
structure constants? Yeah. Yes. What was I going to say? Yeah, the main feature, as we will see, is not that it generates something different from general relativity, but that you can explore different technical aspects. For instance, you have a gauge symmetry of conformal transformation. So you can go to make some calculations easier. For instance, you could go to Yamabe gauge and see what happens. That is a true gauge of the theory.
What's Yamabe gauge?
The Yamabe gauge is, I will talk about that soon. The Yamabe gauge is a gauge where you choose the conformal factor of the metric, for instance, such that the scalar curvature is constant at each point.
But both GR and G dynamics have exactly the same number of physical degrees of freedom.
That's right. This one has 2 degrees of freedom propagating, and it doesn't have, for instance, a scalar.
So presumably the shape dynamics will also respect the solar system data and PPN parameters. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. If it possesses CMC foliation, this would
respect. But it's exactly the same way as general relativity does. Locally, the theory is indistinguishable from general relativity.
At least classically.
At least classically.
At least classically, yes.
Okay, so I think I've given my talk already in the questions. I will try to keep going. So the way that we do this is, so if anyone is interested in technicalities, not just the end result that we get, the way that we do this is you start with the ADM system, which is here, if you remember the graph, and then you find an extended phase space of this. This is known as a Stuckelberg mechanism, and it's very useful in many instances. And so you extend these by a conformal factor and its conjugate momenta, and you just embed initially the ADM phase space into this, you will get an extra constraint that says that one of the directions is in physical. Then you perform a canonical transformation in this extended phase space, and you have two canonical gauge fixings, which basically will set the variables of this extended phase space, the conjugate variables, equal to zero. So in one of them, you set pi phi equals, it's the opposite here. You set pi phi equals zero, and you get to shape dynamics. And on the other one, you will set phi equals zero, and you get back to ADM. Then you have these two surfaces here, these two theories that are gauge fixings of the same mother theory, or linking theory, as we call them. And then you can explicitly see that if you perform a further gauge fixing, which basically is the analogous of this, so I should have put this in blue, but I forgot. And a further gauge fixing here, you get down to the dictionary theory, which is the York theory in CMC.
Purple is on purpose because the intersection is
purple. Ah, yeah. Yes, that's right. So the purple is because the intersection is purple. But so the dictionary theory in this case is this proper York CMC thing. So you can see that you require a gauge fixing from each of the theories. So that means that shape dynamics is not itself a gauge fixing of GR, and nor is GR a gauge fixing of shape dynamics. You have to go down from both sides to get to the same dictionary.
So you reduce the number of degrees of freedom, the lower you get in that graph, is that the...
Well, so, yeah, so you reduce the number of variables. So these are gauge fixings.
Yes.
So in words, here I will just say what I just mentioned. You introduce that, an extra constraint arises, which will constrain the functions in extended phase space to represent the original functions. Then you impose the natural gauge fixing. You have to separate first class parts from second class parts. So basically, in the up here, when you impose these constraints, the constraints that you had gotten from both ADM and from embedding this into a larger space, we'll have first class parts and second class parts with respect to the gauge fixes that you choose. And then what happens is that the first class parts will propagate that gauge fixing, so they don't need to be fixed. They are not fixed by this gauge fixing. And the ones that are gauge fixed will have to be solved. As I said before, they're second class, so they have to be explicitly solved. And one of the main things here is that after you have separated the scalar constraint, which is the only one that has this property, that has second-class parts with respect to the gauge fixing, you will be able to solve all the second-class constraints for the extra Stuckelberg variables, for the variables that were there, the unphysical ones, phi and pi phi. So you get back to the original phase space with the canonical Poisson bracket.
Say that it's proposed on both sides.
Yes, yeah. Well, for GR, it's rather more obvious because you're just putting... setting phi equals zero back again. And then you do the same procedure and you find out.
So what is this artificial symmetry you introduce? How does it happen?
I'm sorry?
What is the artificial symmetry?
Oh, okay. So the artificial symmetry doesn't have a physical interpretation in itself, the artificial symmetry there, because you have these non-physical degrees of freedom. But so once you do the canonical transformation, the first, when you just trivially embed, you get pi phi equals zero. And then you do a canonical transformation. This will be maintained. And the transformation that you get is this. This is the trace of pi. This is the mean of pi. So this would be the, I don't know, let's call it. And this is the artificial symmetry that you get there.
Well, the question is, what does it do to the variables? What transformation?
Okay. So all right. So the transformations, for instance, if you have
for the metric.
Okay. So for the metric itself, it will have the same effect because the metric itself has no phi. So it will be a conformal transformation for the metric and the momenta. But for phi, for instance, it will be conjugate, and then you have So.
I think it would help if you write things explicitly.
Okay. So for instance, C, G, A, B. This will be, an infinitesimal version.
Can I help? I think what he was getting at was, because the new theory basically looks like e to the phi times g. And what this symmetry does is it makes g go to some new phi, and then it takes phi and it pushes that backwards.
Oh, so this is just conformal compensator. Compensator.
That's right, yes. Okay. All right. So, and then after you solve for the second class constraints for the extras to covert variables, you get back to the original phase space with the canonical Poisson bracket, but now you're left over with different constraints with the other gauge fixing. And these are the constraints that will generate the local 3D field morphisms, so you still keep this foliation preserving diffeomorphisms in shape dynamics, and local 3D conformal transformations, and this global evolution Hamiltonian. So these are the constraints. After you set this pi phi equals zero, and solve what you need to solve, get rid of the extra variables, you get this first class of constraint system still left over. And this is what characterizes shape dynamics. So the takeaway message is that ADM has these symmetries, shape dynamics has a different set of symmetries. This is the linking theory, it's how you form it. And shape dynamics is to York CMC as electromagnetism is to transverse gauge. Okay, so now there are certain problems, for instance, with we should show how it's useful. Why is it something that we should worry about, or tractability questions? So first of all, we should talk. People say, oh, matter fields don't scale. How are you going to include matters in this framework? And so if you want to put in a field psi, for instance, any matter field, and you're wondering how is it going to scale under the same transformations, and you're going to have to postulate some transformation properties for that. Let me start. And there are two problems that might arise when you try to couple matter fields, is that the foliation that you get might depend on the field for the scaling n different than zero. We found that for the physical fields that we tried, for instance, Young-Mills and some others, it does not depend on the scaling if n is equal to zero. But if it's n is different than zero, then the foliation itself, instead of the CMC, might be something not geometric or worse. For instance, for Young-Mills, it might depend on the field gauge, on the U1 gauge, for instance, for electromagnetism. So the solution for this problem is that only metric variables scale. There's this so-called neutral coupling. Yes?
But there is also a relation to your work, your early work. it's also that the Young-Mills constraints decouple from the conformal transformations. And this enforces the same to be equal.
Yeah, I mean, usually one chooses scaling in the York business in order to
That's
make
right.
sure that the...
But funnily enough, it's because, for instance, if you have a divergence condition, as you do in the Gauss constraint,
right.
you have that form of the divergence, which includes the square root of g. So for our variables here, it's the conjugate momenta that will transform, the conjugate momenta of some variables. So it comes as a densitized already. So you only have the partial derivative.
I guess the question is, I mean, we usually choose those scalings in the York business in order
you know, to make the equations not coupled out. Maybe
that's
always be the same thing.
That's the thing. That's the nice point about this is that when you do that, all of these issues coincide.
Okay.
It's just a one-line rule to get what you wanted. Mm. Yeah.
And so, at least the local solvability of the global Hamiltonian, when you in our framework, when you do include these matter fields, we involve the invertibility of an elliptic operator, and this will require some inequality to be satisfied, so that you are guaranteed never to have hit obstructions. Otherwise, you still might hit obstructions or might not, but this is guaranteed that you won't. And as I said before, so both issues will be solved for the neutral coupling for young Mills. And the gauge invariance is respected, as Tim was mentioning. So for young Mills and massless scalars, this is always true, but the invertibility might not hold and doesn't always work, might have obstructions for massive scalars when you try to couple massive scalars.
Then why not use, again, the compensator? Because it's clear given the field, you can write down formal inversion of the theory with compensators. So this tells you what are the couplings. And that's in most cases that is a unique form of the action which is performed in manual.
I think that's what Norbert.
Yeah, you can exactly do this. So most problems don't appear when you use a conformally coupled scalar with the scaling such that the election is or the scalar field is conformally invariant. Then you need an additional energy condition like we were known the energy condition for the second point to hold. Yeah, but then you can use this as a what you call probably conform the compensator, and then you can solve this constraint test.
Yeah. And you can even couple different types of methods. Yeah, only invariant.
Yeah. Yeah, but so this is not something that we did in the original work. We just tried to couple it in this manner without introducing any extra compensator.
I mean, it's the same compensator, right?
It is eliminated in GR to construct the link between the two theories and use the compensator.
So you first do the link for the entire theory.
That's right. You have to do the linking for the entire theory.
Down. Down, yeah. And we don't want this compensator.
The compensators, the variables that you have in the end are just G and pi. They don't have that field anymore. You don't have the phi field anymore.
So when you want out, okay, you end up with conformal gravity because you put the compensator plus the compensator. So you can go up and then you have conformal gravity, couple the conformal matter, and then you can go down by fixing in a different way the conformal symmetry to put your hit plane on.
No, but there may be obstructions to that.
No, we tried to do this what you're mentioning. We went through linking theory and we tried to couple, for instance, these things. And if you want to solve all three conditions simultaneously, you will run into these problems. Because you see, for instance, if you have gauge symmetry or if you want a CMC foliation to be independent of that, you have a specific scaling that you're, at least in the case that we looked at, obligated to look at. So there is no room for extra maneuvering with the compensation.
What I'm saying is there is a unique way to have gauge symmetry that reduces the one you have to have gauge field. And I started from that unique point and gauge fix in a different way to get down to the theory. It's an extension of the shape dynamic. I think my talk in the afternoon probably be around.
Okay.
So let me just get this straight. So there is something. Your statement you're making that it might be at least apparently it's not as straightforward for massive or scalar.
That's right.
But to you, it's not clear that there's any difference.
Yes.
I mean, if this is exactly the same as GR, then it's not terribly interesting. So if there is some difference between massive and massless and scalars in the theory, then that could make it extremely well. That could be very interesting. So that's the question, that is there any difference between divergence between GR and the series?
I guess I'm wondering if that issue you're talking about there where the scalars is the same as the, you know, to carry through the York procedure with scale fields becomes very difficult because you know, some of the signs that you have on certain terms run into trouble and
that's
we don't even know how to do it
that's right.
in many of these cases, and it all depends on the the potential for the scalar field, and maybe that's the mass versus, I mean, you can put a lot of potentials for the scalar field, some would be massive, some not, and choose the wrong one, you're not going to be able to solve the constraint equations.
Exactly. Yes.
Carry through the conformance.
So this might be some selection principle which would say these theories are allowed and other ones aren't.
Yeah. From the point of view of the math, it's just we don't know how to carry through
yes,
the conformal
it's
method.
It's a point of view.
But
I agree.
It's precisely more of a principle than a practicality here as well.
No, but I mean, Julian has the opposite viewpoint, I think. I understand. Okay. So, also the tractability issue that I mentioned before is that you have that the global Hamiltonian is non-local, it's a global evolution. And so here you can try to solve order by order in a large volume expansion. And large here means that it's large relative to the parts of the metric and the momenta that don't have trace in them, because you have to separate out the volume. So here you have that for instance, since you have this new symmetry, you can go to Yamabe gauge, which simplifies a lot of the calculations for this class. Since, as I said, in this gauge, the R is a constant, the scalar curvature is a constant, and it is an actual gauge of this theory, so you're allowed to do that. And this is what I mean here by R naught. And here, if you look at it, it will just, at very large volumes, the Hamiltonian, the evolution will just generate these global scalar transformations. So the evolution by gravity itself is kind of frozen at very large volumes. It just scales things up altogether. And we can also do for this in a straightforward manner a Hamilton-Jacobi expansion for the on-shell action, basically by just following the usual procedure. And this will give you an expansion for the action that looks like this. This is, again, the Yamabe curvature, and these are terms. And I believe these are the same factors that you get in, for instance, Skinder's work for the... I haven't really seen a connection yet, but...
But there's a difference in there. In here we have R0, so we have the curvature evaluated
at the Yamabe gauge.
Formal factor makes it constant. Yeah,
that's right. And the expansion is different. We don't do a derivative expansion. We actually solve all the constraints order by order.
I'm a bit confused. So you're not in the CMC gauge anymore?
No.
It's supposed to be in the CMC.
No. This is still the CMC. You can explore. You can explore these this conformal transformation. The Yamabe gauge just depends on a conform. It's a conformal transformation of the metric.
Okay.
So it doesn't change that condition.
Enrico, maybe let me see if I understand the system. Maybe clear. You are now in the formulation of the theory of shape dynamics. So it is gauge equivalent to general relativity and CMC gauge. But you're now working in the shape dynamics formulation.
That's right.
So you're taking advantage of the local scale of invariance, and you're fixing that gauge invariance by Yamabe gauge by choosing the scalar curvature.
Exactly. That's right. I'm in shape dynamics. Sorry, maybe I should have made this more clear. I'm in shape dynamics now. I have this extra gauge freedom, so I can make full use of it. Explore it.
So when you do that, is that, and so I don't know if you're familiar with these papers of Moncrief and Fisher, where they essentially chose Yamabe gauge, and I don't know, probably about 5-6 years ago. Have you looked at that stuff at all?
No.
They're these 100-page papers, there's about 5 of them.
Maybe that's why.
But but they do that. It works nicely in for those metrics which are negative Yamabe class.
That's right, but
yeah,
so you would run into some problems. For instance, if in this case here, when you choose a gauge, this is a more technical point. But for instance, to do a functional derivative in a certain gauge of the Yamabe, you get a projector here. So we are in a gauge. So basically, this is also G0. It's along the foliation of the section of your gauge. And if it's not a true gauge theory, it's really hard to know what functional derivatives of this will be, because you have the some conformal factor here, which is a function of the metric appearing. And if it is a true gauge theory, you have projectors, and then you can, this will be just read as, for instance, RAB at the conformal Yamabe gauge minus a half of R0 GAB at conformal Yamabe gauge. And if you don't, if it's not a gauge theory, these computations are very complicated. So I don't know. I would have to.
They're worth looking at, I think.
Okay.
If you want to look at that gauge fixture.
All right.
I mean, just we are always the same as the expansion that you get in the test. Because now that comes, probably gives the same.
It gives the same.
Also, pretty why you can choose the gauge.
Oh, okay. I see. So, possible, Tim, how long do you have? Oh, 5 minutes, good too. Told me earlier, but okay, so I am reaching the end. So, it will classically match GR, but only that satisfy this. So, the advantage over a fully gauge fixed ADM is, of course, that the variables and the constraints and degrees of freedom are explicitly local. So this not only will allow you to find a different method to try to find solutions where you don't need to go, for instance, on TT. You just need to choose pi T or traceless. And but also different set of symmetries to explore, different gauges to explore. And so one of the things that we might try to do, for instance, find different solutions that are not so clear and go into the full reduced theory and go back to ADM gauge. So a first try that Guariente is trying is to find this Kotler-Schwarzschild-De-Sitter solution without imposing all the ADM constraints. This is not fully adapted. It's not very good for this because in that case, it's spherically symmetric, so you do have notion of transverse traceless momentum. There is a unique one, spherically symmetric. So it's not, but it is a first attempt to see how things work. Also, ADM cosmological perturbation theory is complicated because you can't separate evolution from the constraints. You have to solve the constraints, the perturbations that have to satisfy the constraints at each level. And in this case, maybe you might try to introduce perturbations that only need to satisfy the local constraints and use the unperturbed global Hamiltonian to evolve. So the elephant in the room, of course, is that the global Hamiltonian is non-local. But this is a required feature of the system. And this implements this holistic aspect of it. And but there are some ways around it. For instance, a large volume expansion are the other expansions that we might try to find solutions order by order. We haven't tried. And the theory is not local because we're including a volume-preserving condition in the conformal transformations. This we do so that we retain a time evolution. We retain dynamical consistency with GR. If we didn't impose this condition, all you would get is the equality of Cauchy data and not the equality of the whole trajectory, of the whole evolution. So you have to impose this condition as well. But if you just want to match a Cauchy data, you might forget about this, forget about the volume preserving condition. And then what if we don't match trajectories? So this is just a preview of Tim Stock, who's going to be talking about the BRST treatment of a theory very closely analogous to shape dynamics, which possesses the full vial and a form of special conformal symmetry and no diffeos in that side, in the side of the shape dynamics or extended shape dynamics, as we call it. And this second theory will serve as a complete gauge fixing fermion for the BRST extended ADM action. And the gauge fixed ADM BRST extended Hamiltonian will possess this hidden symmetry, which we're calling symmetry doubling or doubling general relativity. And for more on this, very interesting, you should see Tim's talk, he's going to be talking about our work on this. So I guess that's it. I guess now you are free to make the questions. So.
Is it the case that how you couple matter is a kinematical consideration, which explains why it's the same in the York-Eisenberg Nechter way of coupling the matter in the initial value problem, and then in the NBFO paper, and then here? But as a kinematical or instantaneous consideration, then
yes.
It ought to be the same.
Yeah, but I mean.
So that's explained by the same mathematics to that each time.
Yes.
It's essentially, constraints have to be like invariant,
and
like things like Gauss constraints and so on.
The philosophy
is. That's right. It's the
we
same
want,
thing.
We want that still conformal transformation of the metric target generator of the symmetry.
I agree that the philosophical interpretation is different.
But mathematically, it is the same reason why. Yes.
Yeah, but this, so is CS plus V from New York, right? So Lee, glad to send up.
Yeah, I wonder if you could draw the analogy to the holographic normalization group is fascinating. So I'm surprised you're not making a stronger statement about the correspondence with De Sitter CFT or ABS CFT.
Well, the thing is that the computation that we did is just classical. This is an expansion of the global Hamiltonian and a Hamilton-Jacobi expansion of the classical action.
Yes.
So
doesn't that possibly imply that the ABS CFT correspondence is based on a classical correspondence that can be seen through shape dynamics? I see Kost is shaking his head no, but I would be very interested to see this fully discussed. What exactly is the correspondence? Is the classical correspondence? Why does it fall short of the quantum conjecture, the quantum correspondence? Maybe in the discussion we could discuss these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very intriguing that you get some distance towards correspondence.
This is
already known that part agrees. It's already known at this point.
No. Of course, it's already in your work. It's known. But the fact that something that comes out of your work and is motivated by the quantum correspondence agrees with the classical theory formulated this way is interesting.
I'm going to talk a bit about it.
Yeah, after my talk, I think will be more useful.
Okay.
Sorry, you were first, I think.
I have like a question for. But I think that the singularity has a defined meaning in GR and the shape dynamics. For example, if the CMC gauge is not arrow in GR, means singularity in shape dynamics. Can you imagine the opposite situation? Namely, that is it possible that some singularity in GR can be non singular in shape dynamics?
Well, okay, so the problem is that, for instance, for the cases that we know, the singularity is only reached after the CMC gauge has been broken. So you cannot propagate that further, for instance, inside an event horizon. So,
I'm asking.
I understand, it's a very good question.
So if we can go through singularity in GR by
yeah, maybe. I mean, if what goes singular is pure gauge and in shape dynamics, I don't see why that would be a problem. But it would have to be a very specific type of singularity.
So ADM works fine with asymptotically Euclidean and the like. This you shied away from looking at that kind of thing. Is there no adaptation that works for that? You can't use CMC, but you of course have maximal foliage.
Okay, that's right.
Same,
so yes, we have brief. It's not a focus of our work. It's actually, I consider it. We just tried it out. It is on a paper of ours, but it's not to the same level of rigor that this is. And basically, what we try to do is do a regularization procedure and consider these expanding boundaries, basically, and because. You see, there you can't use this volume preserving thing, so you have to use different conditions of matching asymptotically something, or boundary conditions.
You should be able to use maximal slicing.
Yeah, we are, but it's a much more contrived.
You just attach some variable to spatial infinity or something.
That's right. We are, but it's much more contrived example. We haven't ever touched on that again since we put that down on the screen.
Since you have the same number of degrees of freedom as GR, do you expect the quantum perturbative gravity to have exactly the same behavior in geodynamics?
Well, that, no, so in the perturbative regime, you would expect, so in the very large, in some limit, yes, you have to, right? Because it has to approximate GR, but the quantum theory doesn't have to be itself the same because it has... It comes from a different gate. So you see, I think if we go back, we can actually go back to here. There is no, for instance, there is no continuous parameter, one parameter family of gauge fixings that will take GR to shape dynamics. So this is an indication that indeed, since they come from the same linking theory, but they come from different gauge fixings, and they're not connected, that there is a good chance that the quantum theory itself would turn out to be different. But I don't, it's hard to say. I must be rather speculative about that.
Are there toy few degrees of freedom problems which can go right and left in this picture and give you some clarification on
yes,
potential differences?
There's several. So we, for example, you can hook up a model of harmonic oscillators, and each of them has its own time. So each of them is a three-dimensional harmonic oscillator, has its own time. So it has 2 degrees of freedom rather than 3. And then you can do the same business, and you see, it's you get precisely the same correspondence. You get one theory that is locally scale invariant, where you can locally rotation invariant, and one global Hamiltonian that involves the entire system, where the constant scale of the system is essentially time. And the other is the usual harmonic oscillator, the usual harmonic oscillator where each has its own time to become rotational invariant. So, and there we can explicitly see how the equations of motion. The other thing is in 2+1 on this sphere of repose, you can explicitly go to reduced phase space because you have an explicit expression for the Hamiltonian on that reduced phase space. And in that case, you can also explicitly check, not just formally with this formalism, but explicitly by.
Like his example had no continuous connection between the blue and the red. Is that true in the toy model?
What do you mean, no continuous?
So there is no combination of gauge fixing. Instead of fixing phi equals 0 or pi phi equals 0, fix a combination of both to 0, a continuous combination that would go interpolate between the two gauge fixings.
We tried that once.
No, but he's asking for the particle model. I didn't try it.
For the particle model, we didn't try it. We tried it for the gravity theory. And those things were inherently sick because they would have second class constraints that you wouldn't know exactly
yes.
what your gauge fix is.
That's right.
So
you'd have integral differential equations that you don't know if they're solved. But this is the only case where you can solve it by solving the differential.
And I mean, for those particle models, you can do such things, and then you get a unitary transformation.
That's right.
Is that true for all the examples you looked at? Because the opposite is also
true in finite dimensions.
Yes.
Oh, no, the multiple choice problem already comes from the dimensional existence. That's demonstrated in the work of Hatch since
the Okay, then I won't hold it, that is true.
So I have a comment with this also to this question about the inequivalence of the quantum theories. So basically, what you're doing here, I mean, you're choosing a time function, which is CFC time function. But when you construct your quantum theory, you basically go to the Cauchy data, which is selected by the hypersurface you're choosing, and then the operators, which are corresponding to the initial data, the quantum representation is constructed according to the Dirac bracket on this slide. This operator algebra heavily depends on the choice of your time function. So, for example, when you choose CMC gauge, basically your observables would be conformally invariant, and then you would get very different results than, for example, when you choose a scalar field as a clock.
Yeah. I agree.
I mean, you can work this out in detail, and you find that you get different observables with very different spectrum, so you really will expect, or you find that the clock views are included.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Have you seen any examples in this system?
No. What do you mean, examples of what?
Inequivalences
between
the quantum
theory
down
the
blue
side of the
paper.
I haven't, but
the.
So,
eventually, we're going to
work
with
some. Rules are this. We work on this. What you can do is you can choose. If you can formally cut the scalar, you can really solve this. You can solve everything, and then you construct. You look at the invariant operators, you get the formally invariant, for example, area operator, which measures area. So since it's conformally invariant, it's not only the area, but it's the area multiplied by a scalar field. So basically what you can measure or what the theory predicts is a spectrum for geometry multiplied by the scalar field. Whereas when you would use, for example, the scalar field as a time function, you would not see this effect. And you would get simply the area as a physical operator.
That's the loop quantum as well.
That's for loop quantum gravity type computation.
There's not an example specifically for that happening.
Actually, yes. I mean, you choose your different variable. Quantization of gravity, and then still the same effect remains because what you're quantizing is basically you're quantizing a classical algebra of observables, and you find that when you choose this time function, then it's conformally invariant, and you should construct some conformally invariants, whereas when you choose the scalar field, you just find something like a certain value of the scalar field, and then the algebra is different, you still get the same effect.
Yeah, for instance, Tim has a paper on 2+1 quantization using shape dynamics. And what you do get certain advantages of not having to impose all the ADM constraints in the quantization.
Okay, we're running a few minutes late, so Tim is the next speaker, so I'm going to substitute for Tim as the chair. So let's give the thanks to Anita.